I'm sure everybody is aware of what happened in San Bernardino, California this past Wednesday. And you know, one of the victims that was murdered was a member of a Church of Christ there. And maybe you don't know that, but you know, it certainly is a tragedy, but there's been a lot of talk about, you know, how do you prevent things like this from happening? And certainly there's been a lot of discussion about gun control. And when something like this happens, those that want to control access to firearms say, you know, we need to take all the guns away. And there are others that say, well, if you hadn't taken the guns away, you know, people would be able to defend themselves. And there's these things that happen in these mass murders have tended to happen in gun-free zones. And so there's a lot of political debate about what's going on. And my opinion, and I'm not going to get any more into political things, but this is not a gun control problem. It's a self-control problem. Guns have been around for a long time. And those that say, well, this is workplace violence. I've been a little mad at work before, but I never thought about going and blowing everybody up because I controlled myself. So the lesson this morning is going to be about self-control. Because if people can control themselves, then guns and knives and cars and bricks and baseball bats and whatever it is that people may choose to hurl at somebody else or use to damage somebody else or words, those things have to be kept in control. And people that have no control of self aren't going to control things. And so the Bible has a lot to say about self-control. In Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28, the wise writer says, a person without self-control is as defenseless as a city with broken down walls. In biblical times, the walls of the city were very important. They were important because it provided a defense against intruders. You know, sometimes we see gated communities where there's a gate and you have and that gate is only as effective as that code to get in the gate has been protected. You know, there's gated communities where everybody knows the code to get in the gate and they give that out to others and they haven't changed it in 10 years. So really not a great defense. You know, I go to Birmingham Southern College quite a bit because we have printing equipment there and they have a guard there, and Birmingham Southern College is not in a great area of town. But when I come up there, the guard doesn't check my ID. I say, I'm going to see Jerome in the print shop. He says, come on. He doesn't really have any idea who I am, but he's seen me enough to trust me, I imagine. But I wonder, you know, how many people is he waving through? Are they really checking? I guess having a guard there might discourage some people from even approaching the place. But, you know, guards and gates and walls, they are there for a purpose. And a breach in a wall was to have a weakness that an enemy could come in and exploit. In the days of Joshua, when the army of Israel marched around the walls as God commanded them, you know, the walls crumbled down. With the walls crumbled down, what did that do? Well, it means they're defenseless. And when those walls came down, then they, the Israelites, can go in. And when we look at the characteristics of godliness, we see things that we need to embody in our life. We need to be content. We need to not be greedy. We need to have the right kind of relationships. And the only way that we can have the godliness that we should in all of our relationships with each other and with things is to have self-control. Paul said that self-control is part of the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5. And Peter said in 2 Peter chapter 1 that we're to add to our self-control, we're to add self-control to our faith. In this proverb here, it warns us that we are defenseless to the world without self-control. We're defenseless against Satan. We're defenseless against his attacks. if we cannot control ourselves. So we're called to exercise control in such a way that we ought to be doing the things that we ought to do, and we ought to be avoiding the things that we ought not to do. And that all takes control of ourselves. Another way to speak of this is discipline. We have to discipline ourselves to do what it is that God wants us to do. Even though there may be times that I don't want to do what God says. I've said many times to my boys when I've asked them to do something and they start making excuses, I get frustrated. I said, just tell me you don't want to do it. Because I know that's really the reason. All the excuses are flimsy. And I can tell you just don't want to do what I'm asking you to do. Let's just go ahead and cut to the chase. I know you don't want to do it, but you have to do it anyway. And a lot of times that's the way it is with the commands of God. We know Moses, when he was asked to go and lead the children of Israel, he kept making excuse after excuse. And God's like, just tell me you don't want to do it. You're going to do it. And so control of ourselves. When Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, he talked about having to control himself. In verse 27 of 1 Corinthians chapter 9, he said, I discipline my body. I bring it under strict control so that after preaching to others, I myself will not be disqualified. So Paul said, I'm telling you a lot of things that you ought to do as a Christian. I'm telling you a lot of things that you ought to avoid as a Christian. And I have to control myself as well. I'm asking you to control yourself. I have to control myself as well. Otherwise, you know, I'm preaching something that I'm not really willing to do myself. I've got to control myself. So I'd like this morning to consider three different areas that we need to discipline our bodies and bring it under control in our effort to be godly. First of all, we need to control the flesh. When we talk about controlling the flesh, Paul talked about this quite a bit. If you look over in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12, you know, we have a tendency to become enslaved to things of this world. The blessings that God has provided too often become used for selfish pleasure and not the way God intended. And Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12, everything is permissible for me, but I will not be brought under the control of anything. And so Paul here is warning us that there are some good things in the world, that even things that are permissible, that can be misused to the point that we are brought under their control. You know, what's an example of that? Well, you know, food is something that we all need, but food can be abused. And obviously there are drugs that can be abused. You know, drugs serve a purpose. You know, why is it that doctors will not call in a prescription for a narcotic, for a painkiller? Is it because they want to make people come to their office? Yeah, maybe. They want you to have to pay to come see them, but know that there's a law. There is a law that they cannot dispense that medication without seeing the patient, because they have to determine whether or not that patient really needs it or if they are addicted to that medication. They're trying to control that. And you see how well that works. You know, there's all kinds of people that abuse medications and go to multiple doctors and you know, fake that they're having some kind of symptom that they're really not, so that they can have access to the drugs. So this is an area where Paul is saying, you know, there's things that are permissible. I think that's a really good example. People abuse something that should be good for you, that's designed to help you, but it's hurting you because you have abused it. You have come under its power. The key point here is that we need to practice self-control so that we can be godly. We can become Christ-like. We cannot allow anything in this world to bring us under its control. It requires self-discipline. We can't be brought under the power of alcohol or tobacco or drugs or whatever it might be. Just yesterday, I saw a post on Facebook from Bill Robinson. He used to preach up in Gardendale. I'm not really sure where he is, but if you know him, he is an avid Alabama fan. And if you didn't know him and saw his post on Facebook, you might unfriend him because he's so obnoxious about it. But he tells everybody at the beginning of the season, hey, this is the way that I am and this is what I'm going to be posting. You might want to unfriend me now. So he's very much into his team. And he posted yesterday, he says, I have a quandary because D. Bowman is preaching in a meeting here and is preaching in a meeting that is going to overlap the Alabama game. What am I going to do? He said, I hope that Alabama is far enough ahead by the time I have to leave for this meeting that everything's going to be okay. And he said he was very thankful for his DVR that he could come home and watch it. And I told him, I said, well, you might want to leave your cell phone at home so that you're not trying to get score updates during the service. And he laughed. He said, I have already planned on turning it off and leaving it at home. See, what he's done is he's realized that he might not be able to control himself. And he might be tempted to look at that and be distracted away from what he was there to do. And he said, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to control myself and not do that. And then we talk about, well, you know, at 11 o'clock Central Standard Time on Sunday is where they're going to announce who's going to what bowl. And I wonder how many brethren in the United States are going to be headed out to the bathroom at that time, you know, to look at their phone to see what bowl they're going to. And so I say that, you know, we talk about things that we're controlled by. We always think about drugs and alcohol and things, but, you know, there's a lot of other things that people can be controlled by, too. And if all we can think about when we're together for worship is, I wonder what bowl game I'm going to. You know, we might think we're a little out of control, or if we have disputes with our friends or with our family that we can't be around each other. Maybe we've become mastered by something that we shouldn't be mastered by. The compulsive gambler thinks that he can stop gambling at any time. But he doesn't stop because he's under the control of it. The sex addict believes that he can stop at any time, or she can stop. But because they don't stop, then, you know, they're under the power of that. When people are unable to walk away from the temptation or the desire, then they've got some control. The only way to know if you're under a desire's power is to stop it. And if you can stop it and live without it, then you've maintained control. But if you can't stop, you're under its control and you don't have self-control. So how would I do giving up television? How would I do giving up the internet? How would I do giving up certain foods and drinks? Do I really have self-control? Well, yeah, I can quit anytime. Really? One of the areas that certainly self-control is very important is in regard to sexual impurity. Society demands more and more that people fall in line with sexual perversion or inappropriate use of this desire. It's constantly portrayed on television, in the movies, internet, magazines, ads on billboards and buses. You really can't get away from it. Paul said in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 3, that it is the will of God, your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality, that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. Abstain from sexual immorality. Just this past week or two, there was a story about Tim Tebow, who had been dating this Miss USA girl. And the story went that she had broken up with him because she was frustrated with him because he would not do things before marriage. That he was a virgin and he was going to stay that way until he was married. He made that commitment. And that she was upset about that. She was frustrated about that because all of her previous boyfriends didn't have that commitment. And I believe that it turned out that this story was not true. But what I want to point out to you is how the media treated this. they treated it as if Tim Tebow was the one that had the problem. That he had a problem scoring when he was in the NFL and football, and he had a problem scoring in other areas of his life. They made fun of it. They made jokes about it. There were some who are Christian that came out in defense of him to applaud his commitment to God, but by far most people were making fun of his commitment to God. That's the kind of society that we live in. That is the kind of pressure that teenagers and young people have in this society when they choose to be faithful to God and be faithful to the person who will eventually become their spouse, where they can rightfully fulfill those desires in marriage. It used to be shameful to lose your virginity. And society today looks upon it as shameful that you are still in that condition. And that is shameful. It is the will of God for each one of us to remain pure before God, that we control our bodies, not burn in the passion of the flesh. And people kind of want to redefine sexual immorality. Well, what really is that? What can I do? It's not that hard to figure out. If it's not with your spouse, it's sexual immorality. You don't need to be fulfilling those desires. You don't need to be looking at pornography. You don't need to be doing things that would lead up to areas that you don't want to go and be tempted in ways that you're not going to be able to fulfill according to God's law. If you're engaging in anything in a sexual way with somebody that you're not married to, it's a violation of God's law. Marriage is to be the fulfillment of that. Spouses have an obligation to each other to fulfill those desires. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 5 says, "Do not deprive one another except by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." We have a responsibility as spouses to one another. The responsibility there is that this is the only place those desires can be met. And I've heard people say before, you know, people that have fallen into fornication and adultery, "Well, you know, my wife is not, she's not cooperating, so I've got to go seek things elsewhere." Or it may be the opposite. "My husband's not cooperating, so I need to go fulfill my needs elsewhere." And that is absolutely wrong. That the spouse that's not cooperating is not cooperating. It's absolutely wrong that the person feels justified in going out and sinning. There is no justification, regardless of what your spouse is doing, for you to go out and commit adultery. No justification at all. We are commanded to control our bodies, and we need to control them without excuse. While a spouse may be wrong for not keeping their end of the marriage covenant, I'm not justified by committing sexual immorality because of someone else's error. You know, two wrongs don't make a right. And in that situation, both of them are wrong, and they need to do what's right. I know it's an uncomfortable subject to talk about these things, but it's something that's just out there. It's something that young people that are growing up are going to hear about, and we need to be teaching them what is right concerning the use of our body so that they will be prepared for the way society is going to treat them for making the right decision. And it used to be that it was the guys that would pressure the girls into inappropriate behavior. "Well, if you love me, you would. Well, if you love me, you wouldn't ask." But now the girls are pressuring the guys. There's a lot of immorality out there, and we need to be committed to self-control. We need to teach it, and we need to practice it. Also, we need to control our thoughts. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul said that we need to take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. So we're not only to discipline our bodies, we are to discipline our minds. You know what? When we discipline our minds, it makes disciplining our bodies a whole lot easier. We have to take control of our minds. The things that we think about is what we will want to practice. If immorality is in our hearts, then at some point, it's going to be really hard for us not to practice immorality. How would the immorality get in my heart? Maybe I'm watching movies that I don't need to watch. Maybe I'm reading things that I don't need to read. Maybe I'm focusing on things that I don't need to focus. Maybe I'm going to places on vacation I don't need to go. I told you before about going to a show with my father-in-law in Gatlinburg years ago where it looked like my father-in-law was asleep. I thought, we paid $40 for this dinner and you're sitting there. No, there were girls on the stage that were wearing short skirts and he closed his eyes so that he would not be looking at what was on stage. He was controlling his mind by closing his eyes. And I thought he was asleep. It never occurred to me to close my eyes. I paid for this show. But I should have closed my eyes too if I had been thinking the way that he was thinking. We have the tendency to think it's okay to entertain thoughts as long as we don't act on them. And you hear people make jokes about that all the time. They're looking at girls looking at a good-looking guy or guys looking at a good-looking girl at the mall or something. Well, it's okay to window shop as long as I don't buy anything. No, it's not. Why would you be shopping when you already have a spouse? If that's what's in your mind, that it's okay to entertain those thoughts as long as I don't act on them, you're setting yourself up for destruction. Matthew chapter 5, verse 27, you have heard that it was said of those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you, whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Jesus saying, oh, it's okay to window shop. Jesus is saying, no, it's not. What was Jesus teaching here? Was he teaching that you can put away your spouse because they thought about another woman or they thought about another man? No, that's not what Jesus is saying. But Jesus is teaching that you need to clean up your mind. And we can't justify keeping lust in our minds by thinking as long as we don't act on it, then we're okay. Don't think that it's not a sin to be actively lusting and not trying to control your mind. David, when he looked upon Bathsheba, he couldn't help what he saw, but he could control how long he looked. You know, the old country expression is you can't keep a bird from landing on your head, but you can control it from building a nest there. And David didn't control that. Conversely, we need to think on wholesome things. A way to fight this battle is to use the tools that Paul gave us in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. And too many times, we don't follow the simple instruction. Beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there's any excellence or if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. So we need to keep pure things in our minds. We have the power to change the channel in our mind. We can think about other things. You have to choose simply to think about something else. Self-control of the mind is not just simply refusing to dwell upon lustful or evil thoughts. It requires us to keep wholesome thoughts there. So keep a Bible with you. Listen to Bible lessons. Do something else that will help you keep your mind away from evil. Pray. Another thing that we need to do in regard to emotions is we need to control our emotions. We need to keep our feelings in check. Emotions are an area that is very hard for us to control. So many times, people act out based on their feelings, on their emotions. I don't feel like doing this. I don't feel like going to worship. I don't feel like loving my wife. I don't feel like loving my husband. And we justify our actions based upon how we're feeling, not what's rational or what's right. You know, just yesterday there was a woman on TV that said that the reason that these people went and killed all these people is because somebody had made fun of them at work. Somebody had said something derogatory about their religion. And so she was justifying what they did in going and shooting up everybody because somebody said something that hurt their feelings. And so it's the victim's fault, which is ridiculous. If that's the way that we're all going to behave and take out things upon people who hurt our feelings, then the world's really in a big mess. But fortunately, most people are not that irrational, but people are pretty irrational when it comes to emotions, even though they don't go to that extent usually. We let emotions get in our way, and we feel like, well, I've got a right to feel the way that I do. But we need to bring our emotions under control. That's part of self-control. You know, there are sometimes when I take something personally, that I'm reading something into a comment. And this happens a lot at work when I'm reading emails and things. When I'm reading between the lines that they're taking a shot at me. And then I ask somebody else's opinion. Well, I don't really see that at all. What's the problem? Well, they're dumb and they can't really see what's really there. No. Maybe I'm too touchy. Maybe I'm reading something into it that's not there. Maybe I need to chill out and not take everything so personally. It's about controlling yourself, controlling your emotions. And we have emotions that we need to bring under control. It might be anger and rage, resentment, self-pity, bitterness. And sometimes those feelings are explosive. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they simmer and they fester and they come to a boil over a period of hours or days or months. But consider this. The example that I just gave about myself, where does that come from? From an improper focus on myself. Anger and rage come from the feeling that we've been mistreated or I've suffered some kind of inequity, I've suffered some kind of injustice. And we see, you know, political correctness gone haywire today. You know, there's a college that is giving counseling to people who saw a Confederate flag sticker on a lunchbox. Oh, you've got to be counseled because that hurts you. And somebody else said, you know, the last time they got upset about stickers was when they were 3 years old. Why are people upset? Why are people so touchy? Because they don't have control of their emotions. And they want to be offended. And that all comes from being self-centered. Self-pity, bitterness, all come from that feeling that we don't think people are paying enough attention to me. I'm not getting what it is that I deserve. I'm getting things that I don't deserve. And this is destructive. It's destructive to others. We are destructive to ourselves. And we warp our sense of reality. We warp really any recognition of what truly is right and fair and just in the eyes of God. So listening to our emotions causes us to become self-centered and egocentric, believing that everybody should pay attention to me, and if they don't, then I'm hurt. Everybody needs to change so that I'm happy. And we are to govern our emotions in the kind of hate and vitriol that we see in the political arena and we see on the part of those who take their sense of justice into their own hands and begin destroying things and destroying people.
have a lot of problems with self-control and have a lot of problems with self in general. We have to govern that. Our feelings can lead us in the wrong direction and cause us to act very foolishly. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 32 says, "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and one whose temper is controlled than one who captures a city." So there is great might, there is great victory when we can control emotion, and we don't often realize how important that is or how enslaved we are to ourselves. And it just helps us because we don't need to act on those things. As difficult as it is, we must try not to act upon our impulses and our emotions. A lot of you are familiar with Microsoft Outlook, or you're familiar with other email programs and how you have a draft folder and, you know, things that you may have started to write at one time and you decided, well, I'm not going to send this because I wrote it in anger. It's a really good decision to sometimes not send everything that you thought or that you wrote. It's also a good thing to maybe go into your draft folder once in a while and delete some things, because that was one of the biggest things that came to my mind when I was no longer working at EBSCO, because I was immediately locked out of my email. I thought about all those angry drafts that were in my email. Everything I wrote was true, so somebody may have benefited from it after I was there if they were nosy enough to go in and read that. Well, never knew Randy thought that. So I was trying to control myself. It made me feel better to write some things down. Maybe I should have gone and deleted them. But what I'm saying is I chose not to act on my emotion any further than that. And sometimes people write things and say things that maybe they should have thought about it for a little while, because after it comes out of their lips or it comes across, they think, well, I need to retract that. Well, I can't. Don't act on impulses. Don't act on feelings until you've really considered what it is that you're doing. Is your response godly? Is it the way that Jesus would react? Is it according to what you know to be right and pure? So that's a great challenge. And we need to realize that we don't have to act out. A lot of times we do exactly what we see others do. If we work with people who are explosive, then we become explosive. If we had parents that were angry and yelled, then we become angry and yell. We must see the flaws of what we've learned or what we've become accustomed to and not act like everybody else does. That's what it means to become a light in the midst of the darkness. You're not like everything else, like everybody else. We need to fight those feelings. So the keys to self-control are to develop sound judgment. And sound judgment comes with a good knowledge of the Scriptures. That's how Jesus defeated temptation, was His knowledge of the Scripture. We need to know what's right and wrong so we can have proper control of our bodies and have proper control of our thoughts and emotions. It comes from relying on God and lots of prayer to God to help us control ourselves. How often do we see people who pray in times of emotional distress? When they really, really need control, that is a good thing to pray in a time of emotional distress. A stronger prayer life will encourage us to have better judgment. And we really need to surrender to God. We need to surrender to God's control in our life. Are we really willing to give up the fleeting pleasures of this world because we know that it is going to mean good things for us later? Are we willing to live a life that's pleasing to God? Self-control is needed, and it only comes from surrender to God. When we fall to Satan, we need to have the willpower to make a commitment to obey the will of God and to correct that, to repent, and make amends however we can with those who were damaged by our lack of self-control. And the reason that that we fail at exercising self-control really goes back to what I said at the beginning. It's just we don't want to. And I reacted the same way to my dad as my kids reacted to me when he told me something I didn't want to do. I hardened my heart. And I became stubborn because I was asked to do something that I didn't want to do. Well, God is asking us to control ourselves. He's not just asking. He's telling us. Are we willing to do that? Are we going to be stubborn and not do that? Too many times I believe that people that are angry want people to see that they're angry. They want others to feel their rage. People fantasize about various desires of the flesh. And they want to be the victim and cast pity upon themselves and have others pity them. We want to give in to desires. When we want to give in, it's because we really haven't made a commitment to fight. We have not made a commitment to control ourselves. Again, remember what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. He said, I discipline my body and I bring it under strict control so that after preaching to others, I myself will not be disqualified. Paul said, this is hard. But he said, I need to discipline my body daily. He's talking about a commitment that he has made. He has surrendered himself to God's control. And that has a lot to do with our success is how much we really want it. We have to wage the war that goes on in our minds. That's what Paul talked about again in Romans chapter 7. He says, I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, bringing me into captivity to the law of sin which is in my members. So this battle for self-control is in the mind, whether it's lustful thoughts or evil thoughts or murderous thoughts, whatever it is. It's up to us to take that captive, as Paul said, and be obedient to Christ. Don't dwell upon those things that are going to make it hard for you to be in control. You know, we know better. We know what's right. Everything that I've told you this morning is nothing new. We have to fight against desires, against thoughts, and against emotions for us to be godly. You know, when you're raising kids, there's an expression called the terrible twos. It's hard to teach a two-year-old child because when they want something, they expect to get it, and they expect to get it right away. And we try to teach them. We try to discipline them so you're not going to get everything that you want when you want it. But if you'll just be quiet, I'll go ahead and give it to you. Yeah, I think about this. I think how often is it that we act like two-year-olds ourselves? You know, we want something. We think about it. I think how I'm going to attain it. And we act upon that desire. And whether or not it's something that we need to have, it doesn't matter because I want it and I want it now. We feel a certain way and I'm going to act upon it. That's part of this war that Paul is saying. There's things that I want. There's things that I want to do. And I know I'm not supposed to do them. I've got to bring my mind captive so that I'm not going to be under the law of sin. So control is something that is our choice. And lost in all the debate about whether or not you should have a gun, what kind of gun you should have, what kind of ammo you should have if you do have the gun, how possible would it be to collect everybody's gun so that nobody has one? You know, there's all kinds of talk about this, but there's no talk about the lack of self-control and the lack of godliness on the part of the one who did these things. If we can't control ourselves, we are going to be destroyed spiritually. Control is our choice. We exercise control when we want to. God has given us the tools. He's given us the instruction. I believe He's equipped us all with understanding of what it is that He wants us to do. We need to exercise that so that we can be more like Jesus Christ. One of the things that is amazing to me about the life of Christ is to see how he held up in the midst of unfair persecution. And how mistreated he was. Yet you see the self-control that he had and the laser focus he had on his mission. He had not become distracted. He did what it was that his Father had sent him to do. And that's the reason why he can be the perfect sacrifice for us. That's the reason he can be the perfect example for us in learning how to have a life of self-control. So I hope these things will be useful to you and an encouragement to you. If we can help you in any way, be obedient to the gospel of Christ. We invite you to come while we stand together and sing.